David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 340. I'm your host, Steve Raker, staying warm down in the comic book bunker, even while the climate gets colder and colder around me. And in cold climates, we've got Kevin up in Canada. What's up?
Definitely cold.
And keeping himself much warmer is Andrew, the LA Rabbit, out on the West Coast.
It's cold out here too. Listen to him laugh. It was,
hey,
I'd say
almost freezing the other night. You know, within freezing. A while, a couple of 10 or 20 degrees.
It almost went into the that range you don't want to be in, right?
Exactly. It almost dipped into the 40s. I'll have you know,
hey,
at night.
That's rough.
The desert gives up its heat as quickly as it absorbs it, you know? And actually, I wonder if the difference in after having all the fires and stuff, and losing a lot of the vegetation changes, you know, holding in some of that heat and stuff from during the day. But anyway, this here is a Marvel podcast. We have past episodes and new ones archived over on marvelnoise.com. We've got a Facebook page and Twitter that we use to share pictures and gallery images and new episode announcements. We are part of the Deliberate Noise Network, where you can find other fine comic book podcasts like our sister show, who shares the cast with this show back and forth, Indie Comic Book Noise, where we talk about the indie books that we're reading that we don't get to talk about here. Also, listen to me as I join Mark Cruz as their guest over on the Comic Book Dungeon podcast, the current episode 34 and the next episode 35, where I help them cover Star Trek issues 4 and 5, the first original Marvel Star Trek tales after their adaptation of the first motion picture. And it's also the first U.S. serialized Star Trek story. Marv Wolfman, Peter B. Gillis, Dave Cockrum, Klaus Janson. You've heard those names.
So as a young man, I really hated that first Star. I saw that Star Trek movie in the theater, and I really hated it as a little kid.
The V'ger thing was clever. Yeah.
It went over my head at the time.
I hear you.
When did that movie come out? 78? 79?
Yeah, I would say 79 or 80.
Yeah, I probably should have known about Voyager, but an 8-year-old Andy, it was a little bit too much for him.
So with the craziness of the holidays and the new year and all that, it's been a while since we've talked. So I've been finally getting a chance to read some books and catch up on some series that all of a sudden I saw like solicitations for new number ones. And I'm like, ooh, maybe I should go back and read that series now that it I was getting behind on it, but now it's finite, you know? It happens.
Yeah, I'm still behind. So take heed, listeners. I'm in solidarity with those of you that are still jammed up. You always think you'll have more time over the holidays. And then, yep, bam, the holidays are over. And you're like, wait, I was supposed to have like weeks off and free time and fun to do nothing but read comics and play video games.
I know. You play a little bit of Link's Awakening and boom, there's your days.
I also get stuck in waves of reading about comics and not actually reading comics. I like the historical stuff, and I just finished the Jim Warren biography that Bill Shelley wrote. Pal of the show Jim Whiting lent me that hardcover, and it's a great biography because it just covers, I mean, that Warren history is like the history of comics, plus you get all that Universal Monster stuff because of the 4E famous monster stuff. It's like a who's who of Bronze Age creative teams and stuff. Fun.
Yeah, I watched that on Amazon Prime, I think. They had the X-Men, the Chris Claremont X-Men documentary. I don't know if you watched that, Steve.
I did
watch
it.
That was a lot of fun.
It was. They did a good job with that, actually. It was fun to see when they brought, like, Wheezy on and a couple of other Bronze Age, administrative personnel that we know that was working with Claremont at the time, and they were surprisingly candid.
Yeah, and I did watch the Stan Lee ABC special that aired in December as well. The one, the tribute to Stan Lee, that was a Friday before Christmas.
Yep.
So I watched that too.
I missed that one, but how was it? Was it kind of, it seemed like from people's reactions, it was kind of cinematic fluff stuff, but
it's about what you would think. The lure was at the end, they found some lost footage of Stan reading a letter he wrote to a younger version of himself. Like, it was one of those. Perspective. But it was so funny. They obviously put that at the very end of the show.
Sure.
Because they know a ton of us were there. I mean, it's nice to see the movie and TV stars recognize it. But yeah, there isn't a lot of, they're not really going to cram a lot of hard-hitting things. And I'm sure they would have censored out. I would have loved if there were some, like, super hardcore Kirby people that tried to disrupt it in the middle, but nothing happened like that. It was a controlled atmosphere, but it's also one of those things, you set the DVR and then you watch it when you have a little bit of free time, and it's fun. So I'm fine with sort of recommending it, but I'm sure you can find that on YouTube of Stan saying like, oh, don't worry about it. You know, it'll all work out.
Yeah. I think I've seen Maya Angelou's version of that. Yeah, I missed
it. Buy Apple stock. You know all that stuff you'd say to the younger version.
Yeah, I was at a track meet and missed it. And I was like, oh, man. Kevin, the last time we talked, you had mentioned, I can't remember if it was on air or off air, that you wanted to catch up on the Chip Zdarsky Daredevil series, and that kind of things were happening that seemed interesting or worth checking in on. And like you, I hadn't read more than the first few issues of this current series after it really wasn't, it really didn't catch my fancy. There wasn't really anything wrong with it per se, but it wasn't anything that I felt like it really needed to be kept up on. And so I checked out the last 6-issue arc that just finished, issues 11 through 16. Did you check these out at all, Kevin?
I'm still catching up. But what I think, it's weird, because remember that miniseries came out before this run?
Oh, yeah.
And I know some people love that miniseries, but really didn't. It was like that other miniseries that came out in between titles before, like what was that one? Was it Daredevil Reborn or something?
Where he was dead and had to come back from.
Yeah, I just feel like this one in between was like another iteration of that one.
Absolutely.
And so then when I jumped on the new book, I'm like, the first issue was fine, but I just wasn't in the mood.
Was funny is remembering all of the times that I would pick up issues of comics that I wasn't a regular reader of, and just like any other literary set of muscles, you develop the skill as a comic book reader to be able to like kind of jump into this fictional history of a character and kind of where he is on his path and kind of pick up what the status quo is, you know? And lately, mostly because of this show, I'd say over the last decade, we've stayed pretty on top of everything that's going on in almost every series, give or take a few months. And only recently, and because of some of my distractions and limitations with my head and stuff in the evening where I haven't been reading as much, I let some series kind of go and kind of waiting to hear some buzz or hear that, oh man, there's the next great Daredevil story, for instance, that needs to be checked out. And this is one of the ones that I kind of let get separated, you know, from the wheat. Some of the chafe here.
Yeah, I've been hearing lots of buzz. Once we got to the, like, I heard people talking about it, but once we got to the end of the year, it's just like a lot of people pumping it up.
It was funny to jump in and see, okay, you know, we've seen everything happen to Daredevil, right? Including being dead and reborn, being possessed and everything else. So let's see, what's the latest take on Daredevil, you know? And what's this arc that is all this buzz? And this latest six-issue arc is called Through Hell, written by Chip Zdarsky and art by Marco Cicchetto.
Oh, I love that work. Love that art.
Yeah, his stuff is getting, I mean, it's gotten really sharp. It used to be a little bit more kind of immediate looking, and now it's, it's so tight, it's almost like getting like Ian Churchill tight. Like, but he does the five issues of the series, and then the last issue of the arc is drawn by Jorge Fornes, who is more of like a Chris Somney, David Aja style, which is all fine. He's a fine storyteller. The issue looks great, but it's just very jarring from the sharp, tight, thin lines of Tichetto.
And was there a shift in the story or something, or no?
Nope.
Like, was it meant to,
no,
you know, reflect?
No. And it wasn't written that way, too. Like, he knew the last artist was going to be a different, you know, it wasn't, no. Anyway, the arc follows three concurrent storylines, and they, only two of them really intersect, and one is involving Daredevil, or Matt Murdock. I'll say in a minute what his current deal is, and one is involving a New York City cop who has just been transferred from Chicago and is now working here in the city, and then one storyline involves the Kingpin, who is currently still the mayor of New York City.
Still?
Yep. Sorry, J. Jonah Jameson. You had your day in the sun.
It's true.
So Matt Murdock's deal is like he recently, I guess, mystically put the cliched genie back in the bottle involving the secret identity thing, and no one knows except Foggy that he's Daredevil. Okay? And he accidentally killed somebody, so he's like, Matt has given up on his Daredevil persona completely. But, you know, of course, things start going bad and he gets dragged back into feeling, you know, like he has to use his powers responsibly, so to speak, when things start going sideways. But now he's not in his Daredevil costume. He's like the Netflix Daredevil, right? But with a panic disorder, because he's like all messed up about having killed this person. So
or the man without fear, Daredevil?
Well, you know how, like, Daredevil, like, listens to people's, like, pulmonary rate and stuff and breathing and everything? Now he can't hear past his own breathing because he starts breathing and, like, his throat's in his chest and he's starting to have, like, a panic attack. And Zdarsky must have some knowledge of this because it's actually a pretty good reflection of panic attacks coming on sometimes at the worst moment. They don't overdo it either, but you could get the deal that he really doesn't want to be doing this. Also, old flame Elektra. We like Elektra. Let's see what
I always like Elektra.
Let's see what they're doing with Elektra now, right? She comes in and she wants to be his new Stick. Stick being the old Frank Miller written in trainer who trained both Elektra and Matt in their quasi-ninja ways. And her is basically that, like, Netflix Daredevil, you're soft. You know, you've totally lost your edge. You're not going to survive for a minute out there against somebody who knows what they're doing. Let me show you. And she, you know, beats him up a few times, that kind of thing. But the
he's into that.
The whacked-out thing, though, is because of this whole no one knows who Daredevil is. She doesn't know that he's Matt Murdock and Daredevil. He's just the guy. He's Daredevil, but now he's got a bandana over his face that just blocks the top half of his face, like, you know, the Netflix costume. But she remembers having a relationship both with Matt and both with Daredevil, so he thinks those are two different exes. Like, she thinks she has these two different lovers, even though it's the same person standing right in front of her, and he knows that he's the same. It's kind of hokey.
Wow, so a lot of legal procedural, and he dresses like the Netflix show. Steve, you're really selling hard on this.
I mean, the Netflix show was great, though, so...
I enjoyed it, but I don't want to read a comic with them dressed like the Netflix show.
Spidey makes an appearance. He has a good talking to with Matt, because, again, the whole power responsibility thing, and he wants to ensure that Matt really has hung things up and that he's going to get his head straight for a while and not go back out there because you're a little volatile. You just killed a dude, you know? And
yeah, and clearly lawyers can't do any good in the world. So the only way you can make a difference is by wearing a costume and beating up strangers.
Well, you know what he's working as right now? He's working as like a bail bondsman. So he's doing
something. I don't know if you can... Like, remember he had that whole deal with the lawyer thing? He couldn't go back to lawyering?
Right.
Well, please, we're now going to take all the stuff that's happened to Matt Murdock and pretend like we can... The number of times he's been barred, disbarred, had his identity revealed, had everyone forget his identity.
And had his identity revealed again.
And with Elektra wanting to give him his groove back, the reason why he's trying to figure out this other way to go out there and... is because there is a gang war going on in Hell's Kitchen, and the police have been ordered to keep out of it and not come into Hell's Kitchen.
You know what I like, Steve? Gang wars.
I know you do. That's why I brought it up. It's the owl. It's Hammerhead.
Oh,
it's
nice.
A really skinny owl. And what's left of the Kingpin's setup. But the Kingpin's apparatus, he's trying to parlay... being a mayor into legitimizing some of his business interests and maybe like jumping up that next like social mobility economic ladder thing and getting into the next level of power and money.
Senator Fisk, nay President Fisk.
I mean, his story is the most entertaining one here. He has a power lunch with these like deep state one percenter types. It would be like having lunch with both, like, the Koch brothers and George Soros, you know? And they are all looking down on him. Not only is he, like, just a mayor, but he's a mayor who's, like, been to prison, you know? Wah, 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 you know, lovey, ha, 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 you know, all that deal. And this one guy keeps making jabs at Fisk, and finally he's got to, like, excuse himself and go to the bathroom and just, like, catch his breath. And it's funny to see the Kingpin... you know, at the bottom of the totem pole trying to impress. And the guy who was saying the most egregious things at him, like kind of to his face, even though there were veiled comments, he shows up to use the bathroom as Fisk is getting out, and the Kingpin just impulsively murders him right there in the bathroom. And it's not like a clean murder. It's like there is blood all over the walls and ceilings and everything, and he's freaking out. And he's like, I just blew everything, like the whole mayor thing, the whole everything. And you know, my new friends downstairs. And so he calls his man, and they figure out a whole way to, like, get him out of it, so to speak. But that's the most entertaining piece of this whole story arc. Later, the people who own the house, whose house he was at, they take their revenge on Fisk. Because he's just a small fish to them. And there's shades of the whole fall of the Kingpin, because they throw him out of their building, like, out the window.
I bet he mistook his bulk for fat, Steve.
No, they brought in these guys.
Crushed against his stomach.
There was actually a great scene where, you know, he's there to talk to them, trying to be like one of the elites while they're sipping Perrier, you know? And they bring out these guys in armor and weapons to fight him. And he's like, that's not me anymore. And they're like... no, yes it is. And they like demoralize him to regressing to showing that all of that fat is bulk. But it's quite a they humiliate him quite a bit. And then the last storyline was of this cop. He's been on the Daredevil case, and he eats a big slice of humble pie when Spider-Man webs him to a wall and gives him the what's what of how vigilantes operate in New York, and there's right and wrong, and there's legal and illegal, and where do you want to be spending your time and putting your effort and all that sort of business. You know, the whole thing was all right. It had some interesting story beats, but there's so much business talk between, like, the elites and Fisk in legitimizing his trying to fix his businesses to be legal. He's, like, getting into recreational marijuana fields to, like, farming fields and distribution, and then that gets espionage sabotaged and, like, corporate sabotage, and it's like more than I wanted to know about the details of that business and everything. Like, I guess I know what Zardsky's into, but
is Jonathan Hickman co-writing this book with him?
The art's real good, but it's really wordy and not superhero-y enough. But Elektra was fun to see, and the Kingpin thing was interesting. So I'd say it's worth checking out on the Unlimited.
So, more legally than Charles Soule, or less legally than...
Less legally.
Yeah, that was too much legally, I gotta say. Whew.
More businessy, though.
I can take business.
Well, that's because you sell comics.
Wow. Wow.
I read a comic. I'm way behind. I was trying to do all the mutant stuff, and there's a lot, and there's more reading order and everything, so...
Just make your own reading order.
I just quit and have a big stack of them that I'll figure out later.
You, dude. I got a big stack to read.
But I did pick up Revenge of the Cosmic Ghost Rider with Dennis Hopeless Hallam, Scott Hepburn, Antonio Fabella. And then in the back, there's the Semper Fight with Donnie Cates and Jeff Shaw and Matt Miller. Did either of you guys get this one?
I did.
Nope.
Oh, did you? Have you read it, Steve, or is it on the to-read pile?
I read / flipped through it. Once I started reading it, it became more of a flip-through for me.
Yeah, I wish I could. I think, like so many things, something is kind of cool, and then it kind of gets beat into the ground, I feel like. And I feel like Cosmic Ghost Rider was kind of a neat idea, but maybe the sun has set on its continued viability being featured. And maybe a break from it. So the backup fight is the one where modern-day Punisher fights Cosmic Ghost Rider because he wants to know, with time travel, why didn't he save his family?
Right.
And those kind of meta questions aren't... I don't think Cosmic Ghost Rider is best as a serious character. Like, I don't know. Do you treat him like a serious? Like, I thought he was kind of a goof, over-the-top throwback to 90s is how I had portrayed him. Not as, like, we're going to get really deep into the heart of this guy.
Yeah, I felt like it was like the Punisher and Ghost Rider and Cable from the 90s, you know? Like, yes. All thrown together.
And so that's fun. But I don't know that I want to probe the deep psyche of Cosmic Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
And so I think that's on me. So part of it in the beginning is he's Frank Castle and gets thrown into space jail so he can bust out, which is reminiscent of the old Punisher Limited series when the Punisher goes into jail and then has the Rorschach-esque, I'm not trapped in here with me, you're trapped in here with me. Type of scene. But I enjoyed it. I am not continuing with the series. Not in print form. I mean, I'll read it on the Unlimited when it comes as I do my catch-up, because I've been reading a bunch of Unlimited stuff. It's a nice one. Because of the new season system, like, if I don't feel it's essential, I can wait, and then you just read the whole series.
That's exactly how I'm experiencing things, especially after falling behind some. There were things where it's like, no, I want to let that I want to give that the attention it deserves. I'll read it when there's a few issues and I can really get into it. And then all of a sudden I see the series has ended. I'm like, oh, I guess I can get to that now. Yeah, I mean, all of these, like we've always said, all of these number ones and everything's, and every time a status quo becomes a new series, it's not only a jumping on point, but it's also a jumping off point.
And they've just trained some of us to really start moving digital. For Christmas, I got a bigger tablet because that was one of the things holding me back.
Nice.
So I found a bigger one, but the problem is it's still a little bit smaller than a comic because you lose on the Marvel Unlimited app. They kind of waste a little bit of space, I feel like. But it's most size of a comic, so that helps. So I sat and read the entire Poe Dameron, like 30 some odd issues that way, instead of kind of catch-as-catch-can with the Star Wars continuity changing. So yeah, I just feel like they've built this beast. They've made the Unlimited. They've made it so that I know these things aren't going to last, so if I don't feel I need to read it now, I'll just read the whole thing on a beautiful little, take a couple days or whatever, and it picks up where you leave off, and you're good to go.
Well, you're sitting under a tree somewhere.
No, I'm sitting inside. I don't like the outdoors, Steve. I read comic books.
Yeah, the Cosmic Ghost Rider, I had just read him not only in his last series, but then he was just in the Avengers Ghost Rider stuff that we talked about.
Guardians.
On one of the last two episodes. And he was in that Guardians series, too, which that's one of those series where it's like I read the first couple of issues and it says, oh, I said to myself, I'll wait for a couple of issues to build up. And then all of a sudden I saw them soliciting a new Guardians series. So I'm like, oh, let's see what that was about there. 12 issues of that Guardians of the Galaxy series. It was written by Donnie Cates with art by Jeff Shaw. Those are the Cosmic Ghost Rider guys, right?
And the second guy, too. I don't remember who the second guy is. Sorry, second guy.
The first, second set of issues, you mean? It was,
yeah.
The art was Corey Smith in issue 7.
Yeah, that was
to
good,
12.
Too.
Yep. So the first six issues have, we talked about the first issue, there's a gathering of cosmic forces. They get all the different cosmic characters in the Marvel universe, and they have a reading of Thanos' will, right? Because Gamora beheaded him. And Hela and the Black Order attack the gathering, and they steal his corpse after the message is given that Thanos' consciousness has been implanted in one of them, and you know, he will be reborn and all that. So, two teams of Guardians get formed. Initially, they're at odds with each other. One is led by Peter Quill, Star-Lord, and the other is led by Eros, Star-Fox. The goal is to find the compromised Guardian and out him and prevent Thanos' resurrection. They all fail. You know, Thanos is partially resurrected. And Kevin, I was like, oh no, they're doing the Thanos imperative thing again, where he's like, a cognitively delayed, like grunting primal beast of a Thanos. And I'm like, no, not again. But fortunately, that's only momentary. They kill that off. It was short-lived, and the Guardians ended up coming away with a win without revealing too much. Then the second six-part arcs, issues 7 through 12, with the Corey Smith art, was called Faithless. And this has the Guardians facing an all-new Church of Universal Truth. This time, from the future!
In space!
So their deal is they are mind-controlling Guardians and getting them to join the Church and then act as enforcers for the Church for their intergalactic crusades. They kill the entire Nova Corps. Not again.
I know, right?
And the, you know, we're used to the Church of Universal Truth and their big stellar ships and everything, their giant, humongous monolith of a ship, it being powered by the faith of their followers and worshipers. Well, this one from the future isn't powered on faith, but on life. and they're going to go to Earth and use that for fuel. So you juxtapose that threat that the Guardians are trying to deal with in this six-issue arc against a dying rocket raccoon who is rejecting the modifications that were made to him when he was just like an innocent service raccoon in like a psych ward, in a military psych ward. That's new to me. I thought the whole deal was, I'm not a raccoon and all that. But anyway.
It does still take place on Half-World?
Yeah, they didn't exactly change it, but they did have this whole bit of him being, again, like attached to this military vet with PTSD on a psych ward and being like, you know, part of his therapy and everything to be petted and, you know, those were the good old days and all that. Really weird. So the deal is, you know, will Rocket make it or will he not make it?
Or will he get in a giant mech and crush some enemies?
That is pretty cool, but that's a sign. That's not necessarily a sign of making it. That's true. That might be one last gasp and being cool, because he's pretty skeletal in there and his fur's all coming apart and it's like he's looks like a vitamin deficient mutt. It's pretty bad. And then, you know, will the brainwashed Guardians get rescued? Will the Church of the Future be defeated? And did Drax just get resurrected?
Yeah. What did you think of that?
Wasn't my Drax. That's for sure. But it's all here. It ends with the reunion of the movie team just in time for a new Al Ewing written number one.
Oh, he should be even better, right?
His Ultimates a few years ago, guys, was so good. Like, so good. So
yeah, I enjoyed the book. I thought it was a fun team, like the choice of who they put on it.
Yeah, so I mean, here's hoping there's going to be some good Guardian stories, and let's see if anyone can break the curse of actually being able to tell stories with the movie team. Because since the movie, everyone's deal is to immediately break them up. Every new writer.
Yeah, kind of. But Kate's kind of had to deal with the fallout from Infinity Wars, so it was a little, you know.
It's been a running joke on this podcast, though.
Yeah. Oh, the other interesting thing was at the end of that 12-issue run was everything kind of loops back around in a way.
Yep.
That was kind of interesting.
It was a good series, though, for 12 issues and just 2 6-issue arcs. It was, you know, only 2 stories to get into, so to speak. It was good.
Well, I also, I treated myself, boys. I like this. I don't know. I first noticed it, obviously, with the X-Men book, but I picked up the Treasury edition of Silver Surfer Black.
Whoa.
And I'm like, how long have they been doing these? Like I said, I have the 3 X-Men ones, you know, the Grand Design.
Right.
Volumes 1-2. And now this, and I'm like, I like this.
Yeah.
These Treasury setups are cool. Like, I'm all about this. I just don't remember. It seems like now they're everywhere. I'm like, when did this? I approve. It kind of snuck up on me.
You know, I looked up something else from Marvel because I was interested in one of their, like, art books. So I just go, oh, I wonder how many they've done of these. And then I'm like, I didn't realize there were so many. So sometimes these things just kind of sneak up on you.
Yeah, and then before you know it, you can get... And I think we talked about this series and how I liked it, just wanted less words. So just wanted to say that I completely am on board with the Donny Cates, Stradmore, Dave Stewart, Silver Surfer Black Treasury Edition. Now, it's got that funny shape, for lack of a better word, where it's really long for people with bookshelf issues, or if your trade dress has to be the same. Or I know there's people that feel strongly about those issues. I don't. I don't really, you know, whatever size it has to be to work for them. But I also don't, you know, if you have an issue, it doesn't. I don't think you're wrong to want all the same trade dress or only certain sizes or whatever. It just isn't an issue for me.
It's taller and skinnier than the old Treasury editions of our youth.
Yes. I mean, I like those, but they're, it's also like thicker paper.
The cover.
Like, it's a whole different.
Yeah, the cover has some plasticness to it, so a little bit like a poly book cover, you know?
Yeah, and the Silver Surfer Black has those, the spot varnish or whatever that
sure
is. Where
does.
Like,
looks great.
So those are some. So just wanted to say I was shocked, pleased about this new format, and now I have four books in that format. And for sure I'm going to get the Fantastic Four, not whatever the grand design is they're calling that.
And before that comes out, did you see getting the next treatment for this Treasury Edition size?
No.
It's the History of the Marvel Universe thing.
Yeah. Oh, those, I did see that.
Those double page spreads that we talked about, those big page compositions are going to look great like that. They really are.
I did finish out the series, Steve. Right. I'm like, you know what? Even if I just enjoy the art of it, like, I don't need to get hung up on all the story attempts. Just read the, look at the cool composition in those, almost like murals or something.
Exactly.
I would describe it.
Really. Truly. Kevin, got anything to fire off?
So many things to fire off. I feel like I should just do like a rapid fire thing.
And now, yeah. Kevin's Corner.
Remember that series? Hey, Meet the Skrulls?
I do.
Yeah, I do. Wait, Kevin, did you read every comic produced by Marvel between 2010 and 2020?
No.
In preparation for your site? Oh, okay.
I mean, it felt like I did. Like, I did, I don't know, I guess I got pulled in after the indie thing, so I was kind of, it kind of felt like doing both of them at the same time, honestly, because while you're looking up one, you're seeing the other, so, you know, it is what it is. Yeah, so, I remember coming to this one late, but still getting in enough time to get all the issues, because I was just like, it seems like, well, it was also tying in with, sort of, conceptually tying in with the Captain Marvel movie, I think, with the Skrulls being there and everything. And I'm like, well, this might end up going somewhere at some point. Oddly enough, that seems to be true. Because it's a weird, oddball series. I remember thinking the first issue, if it was too much, like the Americans.
Yep.
Like, too much espionage. But now there's been some distance from the show and from the comic and everything when I came back to it. So I think it worked out well. Like, they have their whole little plot thing there. And then, you know, I thought the old MacGuffin goes somewhere. Things happen, horrible things, and then betrayals and killings. And it seems like it's, they're going to, these characters are going to show up again. So it wasn't just like a thing where you're like, even though that would have been cool enough, but yeah, it seems like it was good. And the art was good too. So that was a standout from the Doctor Strange series too, with the art from, I think it was Neil Henderson.
Right.
Yeah. That was cool. So sometimes you take a chance on these weird, like, one-off things and you're like, that's pretty awesome. Like Black Cat. Black Cat is a crew doing some robberies at the Sanctum Sanctorum, or hanging out with Black Fox or whatever. Totally my deal.
Yeah, the first couple of issues I enjoyed, and then last few I haven't really connected with, but I'll keep giving it a try. Heck, it's Black Cat.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised that Black Cat was like one of the top selling like debuts, and like I have no idea why. I mean, it's Black Cat, sure, but I don't know.
The covers don't hurt.
The market.
Yeah.
I think there's been some appetite in the Spider universe in general. And I think people were interested in letting the character have her own breath. I know the two of you weren't always thrilled with her. I believe you guys said you didn't like some of her turn to the dark.
yeah,
a few years ago. So,
right. Yep.
This is a way to kind of clean the air, give her a new title, make it a little more fun.
I mean, it's a good pitch, right? She's got a crew, a posse that has a skill set that she uses for the capers. I mean, that's fun, but I don't know how long it can last.
She marries Spider-Man. That's cool. Another title that was cool is Runaways. Like I kind of feel at this point that privilege to have another long run, good run at that of Runaways. It's not a lot of superhero battles necessarily. Just a lot of people, I guess, surviving, living, figuring things out.
Just trying to make it through the day.
This pretty much like Molly has to go to school. Someone has to work their 9-to-5 job. Like you're thinking, and you're like, "What? This is a Marvel comic?"
It sounds like a country song.
Except, you know, some aliens might show up occasionally. You might have kids of kids show up. You know, there's usually a Doombot. The hilarious. It's like you're lost in space, and that crazy Doombot is always messing things up for you, right? Telling the neighbors that you're up to good or whatever.
Doombots showing up in second-tier books is one of the funnest things in about the Marvel shared Marvel universe. It's just
yeah.
You know, it works in every time era, whether it was the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, currently. Good old Doombots showing up and bugging, like, the New Warriors or some team of second-tier heroes. Hilarious.
Another book that also has a Doombot as part of the cast is Squirrel Girl.
Yeah.
Like, Doombots, get around.
Bring back the Hulkbot.
Oh, geez. God.
Oh, yeah, it's been a while since the Hulkbot.
No, I like Doombots. It's the writer recon tool. It's fun.
And Runaways has always been a blind spot for me. Because when I came back into reading comics, and I was more interested in the stories of the characters that I was tied to nostalgically, and I think I checked a couple of issues out, and the hook wasn't enough of a hook for me at the time, and I really didn't like the animation cell type or palette. How the artwork was. I know a lot of people dug it, and they dug it in other books too, but it just wasn't for me. So,
on this reboot, I think Kevin and I discussed it on issue one.
Did we? We probably did.
Yeah, we talked about issue one, and I think that was one where I was like, sometimes it's hard. It's an interesting choice, and it's always fascinating to see what for me works and what doesn't.
Yeah, I also remember trying to convince that the Vision miniseries had potential.
No, and the Marvel gave up on it and only ran complete reprints of the first issue in the back. They really leaned into that thing.
It's funny how some of these things age. Oh yeah, but Runaways. Good stuff. Yeah, I would say the Runaways concept is as good as, like, finding out, like, the Thunderbolts number one concept. Like, you have something like that out there, I am there. I'm like, that is great.
Hey, it's that energy you bring, Kevin.
I know.
You bring it.
I know. Don't market to me. That's the thing.
I got a couple of quick hits to add to the mix. A couple of Avenger books, actually. Was reading the last few issues of the current arc of Captain Marvel. It's called The Last Avenger, I believe. And it has her armoring up and facing off against the Avengers one by one. Thor in the first issue, Iron Man in the second issue. And the big bad behind it all is that armored Vox guy from the Death of the Inhumans limited series a few years ago.
Yeah, who thought we'd see him again?
I mean, he's a cool design, but...
Yeah.
Weird. And Captain America, I dipped back into to check back in on, because, I mean, I want to like Captain America. It's Captain America, right? But, geez, Cap's really I mean, they really ruined the character with the whole resurrection and then Hydra and the Secret Empire. Maybe they got a bunch of stories out of it, but I mean, Cap hasn't been this... Like, when was the last time we had a good Captain America story, for Pete's sake? The writer, Coates, he's trying to get to some more comic booky stuff now. The latest arc has Scourge and guest stars Misty Knight and USA Agent, but I don't know. It's still flying far below my interest radar.
What really annoyed me about that is normally when they make a mistake, we just all collectively forget it.
Yeah.
But if they don't want to let that Hydra, like, oh, you were mad at Hydra Cap. Well, we're just going to keep. It's like, it didn't work, man. It's fine. Like, there were fun stories and it's comics. You can just forget that happened.
Should have just kept Bucky Cap.
It's just so weird because I thought like Wade was going to do that like in between run to like smooth it over. And then it's the next writer's like, no, I'm doubling down. I got a great idea. And I'm just like, oh, I'm not really there for that. Too many other awesome books.
And I read Tony Stark Iron Man number 19, which is the finale of the whole Ultron Hank Pym thing, which I'm always curious about because I always like an Ultron story and I always like Hank Pym pretty much. This has a big reveal of Tony admitting that he's a clone of the real Tony who died, like when he was reborn and all that.
So like do it over again?
And the issue ends with Arno Stark flying down on Times Square just as the ball is dropping, like right on cue for Iron Man 2020. Like it has to be the first second of 2020 and he's there.
Well, he has to be the Iron Man at 2020, right?
Yeah.
That's a great armor design. He has classic, I assume,
yeah,
Steve?
Yeah, with the big cogs
on
his arm.
Yeah.
Gears.
Yeah.
Slightly afraid they're going to like redo. Like, hey, we want a new one. But that's such a great. It's just like someone typed Evil Iron Man into my brain. You knew it was going to happen. I went and picked up Peter Porker, number one. Did either of you guys grab this?
I didn't.
Maybe I should have.
No, you shouldn't have. No. Zeb Wells, Will Robson. Okay, so. What I think is weird with, like, nostalgia and weird properties is they have this new Spider-Ham, like the Sony movie launch, and that's what they should be focused on. So instead, to start the new series, they pull his origin from the old Spider-Ham series, you know, the original one.
Right.
What, you're complaining about them using something from the comics?
So they started with the first two pages of that, and then they flip to the movie Spider-Ham. And why you should never start with a better comic book than the you're going to give the people. Because then you've already set the bar really high. Like, it's one thing to put in, like, a panel as a montage or whatever, but if you're going to crib, it's an entirely different style, and they were going for a much different thing. Like, there was less of the meta commentary about superheroes from that original run that's mimicked in the Sony movie. The Sony movie's all, you know, like, Wisecracking, isn't it funny? And the incongruity of having an anthropomorphized Spider-Man pig. Where the other one was set in that kind of earnest world, re-examining those 60s storytelling style and tropes, all... A little bit of a wink because it was the 80s, but mostly the anthropomorphic was the twist. And so I feel like it's a huge blowing out the gears then to jump to the other Spider-Man. Spider-Ham, sorry. They still keep all the, you know, funny Captain America and Iron Mouse and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the conceit of the story is Spider-Ham doesn't care anymore. Like, fighting these boring villains, it doesn't matter. You save the multiverse. So all the other heroes don't like Spider-Ham anymore. And they're like, you know, you're just an obnoxious jerk. And so he ends up getting caught up in a multi-dimensional snafu. And the other ones are like, look, we're better off suited, you know, a jerk now, an arrogant. We're going to solve this problem. So they steal his watch, Iron Mouse does. And then it ends up that he gets transported and Spider-Ham ends up in... what looked to be the 616 or some other one where it's not anthropomorphized animals. I just feel like tonally, if that's the story you want, just start, like, don't give us other things that are not... No one's buying this comic that doesn't know who the hell Porker is. Especially because, you know, with Zeb Wells, it's going to be a little bit edgy. You know, it's not... If it was a children's book, it'd be IDW. So everyone knows who the... So I just felt it was a bit of a mess, this first issue, and going everywhere. And I also feel like Spider-Ham as a commentary figure in a 616 style universe is fine and enjoyable, but I don't think that carries a book. And to go back to the fully anthropomorphized Earth, I forgot the number. You know, I love their numbers, whatever that one is. That would have been a world I would have been interested in more staying in. And you get a lot of it in this issue, but obviously the twist is, and I don't know, maybe they're going to go back and forth between the two. But it's funny to see, like, Daredevil is a deer and that stuff. Like, that gig still works. And J. Jonah Jackal and all that gimmick. So either that's an aesthetic that works for you or it doesn't. But I felt like, look, everyone's seen the movie. Like, that's the Spider-Ham. That's Spider-Ham now. It's like Howard the Duck. Like, it ain't going back to, you know, Val Merritt and those guys. Like,
they're Howard the Ducking him by saying you by putting him in a non-anthropomorphized world. I mean,
yeah.
They're Howard so the they're like, him.
Yeah, and like, and I get it. The movie, if you want the movie one, don't. I don't know. I feel like sometimes they just want to put some of those elements in to lure those of us that are interested in those, but then it ends up watering down the product, and I don't have one or the other. Like, if it was just straight up, hey, this is Sony Universe Spider-Ham, enjoy it, I would have been fine. Like, that's what I thought it was going to be. But then they tease me with that excellent, excellent original Spider-Ham that's more to my straight nostalgia drug pumped into my veins.
If any time before the last year anyone ever said that Andrew would say the words, there's not a person who out there who doesn't know who Peter Porker is. Incredibly.
Yeah.
You know, man.
John Mulaney did a great job. Like, that, it was a fun, but it was also a substantially different Spider-Ham. It was the modern Spider-Ham for a modern age. Well, you have to. Like, if they had made it like it was in the 80s, I don't think that would have played tonally. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just a grumpy old man and people shouldn't listen to me.
Ha. Speaking of grumpy.
Well, it can be both.
That's true.
I can be right and be a grumpy old man. No. Yeah, but I wonder, and I also, what, here's what's going to happen is in 3 years, I'm going to read this on Marvel Unlimited and be happier because I'll get through this rough first issue or two, and then it'll be the story it wants to tell. And then I think I'll be less... I really think it's a hard doing... Now that I read so many number one issues, thank Marvel, I've come to appreciate the difficulty in it, and then I really think this kind of... You got to come out and say your thing and say it what you're going to give me right away.
Yeah.
Or I'm just out. And I might be out anyways, and that's fine. But at least you're committing to what you're doing. I think that's a stronger one than these kind of, well, we'll give them a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
Speaking of grumpy old men, old man Logan finally got his coda. I read the 12-issue, which finally ended, series from 2019, Dead Man Logan, written by Ed Brisson, who I like Ed Brisson's stuff usually.
I agree. I just feel like there's a character that never got a chance, Steve. You know, he never got...
So totally.
Never got a crack.
First 6 issues have Old Man Logan mixing it up with Mysterio and Lady Sinister... Sin and Crossbones, as he tries to stop the possibility of his future taking place again, you know, because Mysterio messed with his mind and then he killed heroes and all that. And then him going after Mysterio to prevent that future from happening also tips the baddies off to the idea of this happening in the first place. So they're trying to make it happen and he's trying to prevent it. He also meets the return from the dead Logan, and gets returned to his own wasteland future, finally, where everyone's pissed at him for being gone for so long and letting everything go to hell. Then in issue 7 to 12, he's got to make everything right again. He's got to save Hulk Kid, now teen, fight a all-sewn-together Sabretooth. It's a little too Road Warrior-ish. This issue's long, high-speed armored vehicle chase battles across the wasteland landscape and stuff. Oh, one entertaining thing is there's an X factor that actually matters to the story and isn't just a funny background thing of Old Man Speedball.
He said repeatedly he really likes Speedball.
But Old Man Logan finally gets his old man piece and everything. And like you said, he had a pretty healthy run.
Nonsense. Nipped before he had a chance to even find an audience, Old Logan. Oh, we won't discuss it now, but I did read Old Man Hawkeye, so.
Oh, yes. Great. Now, don't we have to talk about that sometime in one of our Thunderbolts bits?
I guess I gotta read it then.
You totally do.
Ugh, I don't know. No? If you want to.
Really?
It was... Wow. I felt...
Let's talk about it without talking about it.
Okay. Not to... I feel like... I hate this episode that I'm so negative, but I just feel like this old man concept... I don't read too much of it in a row, because I don't know they're doing a great job of... It seems like it's a lot of that... I guess it's kind of a very... I don't know if it's the... Is it the same world, Steve, or just super similar?
No, it's the same world, because okay. Old Man High is in Old Man Logan, the first series, this okay. first story. And then now this is telling more of his deal and how he became Blind Hawkeye to help Old Man Logan and everything. And okay, along the way... But and that in itself isn't very... The only thing that interested me was all of a sudden... Issue after issue, we were getting to see these the end stories of each of the Thunderbolts, and I'm like, "Oh, this is funny! It's a Thunderbolt story hidden in an Old Man Hawkeye story," and that's what was fun.
So that world of the Old Man Logan, I guess, is the one where I was like, "Well, it's a fine world, but it just feels at this point the post-apocalyptic world I like, but in maybe smaller doses." Might be the way to go with that. There's just been a lot of that world.
Great place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there.
Yeah. But I did laugh a lot. I mean, it's something, you know.
I'm not sure that was the entire series, but...
You know, I'm not a monster. I did laugh, so... but, yeah, it was fun. We'll do a, like, Thunderbolts from Beyond, the Bring Them Back Dave segment on Thunderbolts. To get very meta with the Marvel noise. But yeah, that Unlimited, man. Like I said, I just feel like Marvel trained me to read series on that dumb machine.
Yeah, I don't know how they did that. You always raged against the ones and zeros.
I know. It eventually, the convenience of it just wins you over. I mean, yeah, if I had infinite space... And someone to organize my comics for me.
Here's the other thing, is the rich color of a backlit screen is really nice, because color is really drab at times in the print stuff, because that they use that reflective cheap paper, you know? So your blacks are, you know, all shiny from ambient light and everything. It's nice to have the deep blacks and the deep color and hues of the digital presentation.
I'm still a sucker for them, for the paper. It's just that administratively, the convenience of reading, like, I don't have anywhere where I have all 30 issues of anything in the same spot. So for me to sit and, like, read a 30-issue series is an awful lot of hunting and pecking and figuring out where it is. Where here, it's all in one. A full click.
You know what I enjoyed doing, what you can't do in that kind of situation, is month to month, week to week, discussing the Hickman universe. From like Hawkspox to X-Men to Marauders, X-Force, that whole deal.
Yeah, I got kind of jammed up. I like the limited series, and I'm buying all the other ones, but I missed one. Couldn't go to the store every week. I missed one, and then I think one sold out, and I had to go back, and I just ended up getting kind of jammed up a small amount on it. So I have them all, but it's this intimidating pile of, like, I want, because I think I'm still, I don't know if that sold out one, I got a copy, or well, I have to.
There's been a lot of different printings, if you can squirrel those.
Okay, and they always give them different covers, so here's Andy buying three of the same he doesn't need.
Don't buy five copies of each issue.
I'm a little worried. Well, it's more when I miss an issue and have to go back and be like, wait, do I have this? I don't know. But yeah, I like I've liked what I've been reading. And it's fun, they're keeping it together. My question is, I wonder how, I'm hoping they can keep it together, but I wonder how long are they going to keep this before it kind of spreads out enough that he loses interest in reading everything.
This is the thing. You don't have to buy everything.
No, Kevin.
I know you really want to, and I know you're like, oh, I gotta get it, the whole deal, all like 800, but you really don't need to.
But I've already read 790 of them.
I know, exactly. What I thought was kind of fascinating is the collection program, where, like, if you wanted to read the whole thing, like, they're putting out volumes, like, all the issue ones, and then all the issue two and three. And then once they eventually get far enough, like, you're getting the trades of, like, the individual titles, too. So I'm like, huh. Like, you can kind of choose which path you want to take.
You could take the red pill?
You can.
I took the red pill and read Mark Waid's Doctor Strange series. I gotta tell you guys about this book, because we're old Doctor Strange aficionados here on Marvel Noise. Going way back, right, Andrew, with the old Ditko stuff?
Yeah, I held that new issue in my hand, and I was just like, I don't know. I just put it back down. Well, so tell me why I made a mistake, Steve.
Well, this is what happened. Same thing. I saw, oh my gosh, there's a new Doctor Strange issue number one. See, I saw that there was some Galactus Doctor Strange thing going on, and I'm like, well, let me wait until that's over, because I want to read that in a chunk. And then I got distracted, and I guess there was only a couple issues after that, and the series ended. So I'm like, well, wait a minute. Now there's a new number one, new status quo change, same writer. So let me go and read this. I had read and reported on the early issues. I mean, Mark Waid's 2018-19 Strange series ran 20 issues and an annual. The artist most of the time was Jesus Saez, and it follows the Jason Aaron and Donny Cates previous series treatment, where Doc lost all of his magic and he had to find power from various artifacts. Well, the first 10 issues of Waid's Strange series features Doc having mysteriously lost his magic, and he has to go on a quest for new sources of magic, which is, you know, pretty repetitive, right? But this time in space. But with that out of the way now, and Doc sporting a new Cosmos-inspired costume, Strange returns home to his sanctum sanctorum for the two-part Remittance in issues 10 and 11. These issues have an injured, addled Ancient One coming to Strange for help. He was ripped from the afterlife, his astral plane of an afterlife, at least, by this, and he gets returned to the flesh by this black guy in a sweater vest and a tie and dress pants and everything with this insane amount of power. He has this guy with him who forcibly surgically removes the portion of the Ancient One's brain that contains all of the Ancient One's magical knowledge. And it's like in a dirty alley.
But like a astral, like, isn't, I thought the Ancient One was already dead.
Well, that's it. He like ripped him from his astral Ancient One higher consciousness afterlife plane of existence, made him flesh again, then magically, forcibly, in a dirty alley, cut out all of his magic knowledge and put it in a jar.
Wow.
And now this Ancient One is dying because now he doesn't have the spells to keep himself to maintain this physical form. And Strange follows the trail back to a huge, seemingly infinite set of rows of workstations where the magic users, like, ledgers are kept in the Marvel Universe, and they're balanced. And the black guy with all the power is, like, the head bureaucrat in charge. It's all very Simonson, Fantastic Four, Time Variance authority-ish.
I don't know if I'm ready for the new change where they have a powerful magic user lose all their magic power, Steve.
So the Doc's ledger, it's way out of balance. And now the Falteen, Dormammu's race, have invaded Earth as collateral for the loan of all of the magic that Strange has borrowed. And it takes all of the Strange's supporting cast to help repel them, including Dormammu himself. And then, speaking of Strange's supporting cast, damsel in distress turned disciple turned partner, even wife, now ex-wife on good terms, Clea returns in the 6-part arc running through issues 12 to 17, Herald Supreme, with art mostly by Barry Kitson and Scott Koblish.
Well, you know who I'm going to ask about, Steve, so you might as well just tell me.
The deal with this.
Renfro? does he come back to?
He doesn't. But I always liked Clea, and especially that era of Strange. Here, an alien from this magical race on another planet, he's alien, comes to Doc's Sanctum to demand his power to help repel Galactus, who's going to come eat their planet, because Earth has always repelled him. So give me the power to do it. And while he's in Strange's house and Strange is making his arguments, this alien clandestinely absorbs all of the power from the artifacts in Strange's house. And with the power, he rashly banishes Galactus to the dark dimension. Strange realizes that Galactus, who is a creature of science, his presence in a mystical realm will merger science and magic in a harmful way, and he's got to go deal with this. So he forges new artifacts and joins Galactus in the dark dimension. So now Strange has lost another whole power set, and now he's on to another. And Galactus, what does Galactus do? Galactus hungers, right? But everything he tries in the dark dimension tastes funny. So Strange agrees to be his herald and find him a suitable world. And he does. So he leads Galactus to a suitable planet, and meeting up and reuniting with Clea along the way. And thankfully, there's no new take or spin on Clea. Thank God, she's just like good old Clea. Galactus feeds on this planet, but Dormammu spiked the energy, and Galactus becomes a hybrid magic science being. And Dormammu tries to take over Galactus with, like, the magic side, but instead he loses the battle to Galactus's might, and Galactus absorbs Dormammu. And he is treating absorbing magic like he likes the buzz of it, like it's almost an intoxicating thing, and he just wants to keep, like, consuming more and more magic. It turns out that Mephisto mind it all, but the unintended outcome of science entering his realm is like the phalanx from old X-Men lore taking over. Like, circuitry starts forming over the ridges and stuff in Mephisto's realm, and it makes Mephisto realize he's bitten off more than he can chew here and can't undo what's happening. Science and magic start trading places, guns are shooting flowers and rainbows, and the mindless ones have all circuitry all over them and stuff. And Galactus keeps absorbing stuff, and Clea gathers a crew of powerful beings from the Inhumans to the Shi'ar Imperial Guard, but they all get defeated by this Galactus, Magic Galactus, Dormammu merged thing. Black Bolt comes close to felling him with a big primal scream. That was a really cool scene. You know, Kitson and Koblish, they're no slouches. But Doc pulls the old, you know, what do you do to a being who's absorbing energy? You overload the battery, right? You, like, keep feeding it energy, and then there's always someone, no, what are you doing? Trying to hold him back. You're helping the, you know, the enemy. No, no, I've got to keep, you know, oh, now I see what you're doing all along. So when critical mass is reached, I don't know if it's a win, because, like, everything ends. Like, nothing is left but Doctor Strange and Eternity. And the Living Tribunal, right? There's always the Living Tribunal. And the Living Tribunal grants Strange the power to surgically restore the entire universe back to what our reality is. Because only a surgeon would be able to so carefully, you know, make the cuts, so to speak. And I'm thinking, didn't the Silver Surfer just do this in Dan Slott's and Mike Allred's Surfer series? What was that now, a couple of years ago? Probably longer than
a couple of years now. Really.
I also don't want some doctor with bad hands putting these.
This is true.
I mean, didn't we learn that? I was also kind of hoping at the end that Galactus would, like, eat too much and barf it all out again back into the reality.
Get out of Galactus's tummy.
Pretty much.
Or it could have went the other end out of Galactus.
In this whole process, though, Strange and the reader, at least me as the reader, really realize how much he cares for Clea. Unfortunately, Strange then meets up with Mephisto, to whom he owes an earlier favor to, and can you believe it? He gets the Spidey MJ one more day pulled on him.
And
Mephisto eats their marriage, and now Clea doesn't even remember ever having met Stephen Strange. Who are you? It's like, what? No, come on. Bogus.
I would, if this magic twist didn't happen, I was actually thinking, I wonder how Galactus would deal with the mindless ones. Like, who would win? Would they just eventually, like, he could vaporize a lot of them, but at some point, would they wear his power down? I always like the mindless ones. Yeah. I think they're way underutilized.
They looked cool with circuitry on them.
What about the mindful one?
Right?
Hey, we don't talk about this stuff.
Oh, okay.
It's crazy, though. I was thinking all along that the best part of this arc, other than the cool images of Dormammu mixed with Galactus, the best part of this arc was this return of an in-character Clea, but it was all just a ruse just to have her written out in the end. Wah, wah. The last three issues of the series are all done-in-one tales. Issue 18, with art by Jesus Saez, has Doc helping a family in rural Kansas unclog a mystical threat from their plumbing. I swear to God. He goes from the bathroom to the kitchen to the basement to a pipe. It's unbelievable. And it all gets resolved with the equivalent of, like, a magic snake.
Yeah, like a toilet snake.
Yeah.
So he really is just a plumber at the end of the day.
Issue 19 also has Saya's art, and there's a mystical attack that results in a car crash injuring a young boy, and Strange must fend off the attacker as well as save the boy, like, simultaneously, who needs critical brain surgery. And so to do it, Strange uses a taboo spell to heal his damaged hands for good. Performs the surgery on the roadside himself while also mystically battling the you know, demon. And, I mean, I get that it was a big deal event. There was a boy's life at stake here. But, I mean, that there was a spell out there to restore his hands all along, I think, cheapens past stories and past sacrifices pretty majorly.
At least it wasn't over a dog.
But that's the status quo right there. I mean, that's everything changes on a dime with that. The final issue, number 20, is drawn by Javier Pina and has Strange angling to return to his duties as a surgeon. But he realizes that a lot has happened, like, advanced knowledge-wise in the surgical world in the last however many years we want to say it is. So he needs to catch up, and he decides to cheat by seeking out Technomancer Kana, who's been a recurring character, for a knowledge dump. First, though, he's got to help her with the mission that she's on, which takes up most of the issue. It's a good adventure. The doc's request of her just takes a few panels at the end, but leaves Strange surgically updated and ready for a new series, still written by Mark Waid. Like I said before, we're in that era of comics publishing where a status quo change deserves a new series number one.
That's going to come bite him, though, right? You can't just be like, hey, look, totally fine now.
Well, some writer's going to be like, he'll have to sacrifice that to defeat whatever the, you know, there'll be some to put him back, I would imagine, in the, you know, give up this thing to save this other thing.
But he fixed his
hands. Maybe Doctor Strange's hands won't remember they were ever on Doctor Strange.
I was wondering.
Mephisto again.
So Galactus must have psychic. Like, I would think Night would be a better villain than Dormammu to go against Galactus. I don't know if he sleeps, though. Like, but that would be cool. Like, Mephisto teams up with Nightmare to take over Galactus.
And Galactus and we can screams. See
Galactus dreaming and everything. I would watch that. Totally. Galen wakes up. Ditko flops sweat all over his face. he dreams that there's no more planets left.
So it took us a while to get here, but here's the Doctor Strange Surgeon Supreme number one with Phil Noto cover, written by Mark Waid, art by Kev Walker, and the art is pretty good in this issue. It's got
Kev Walker.
Yeah, he's,
and not
I know.
Just because of the Kev part.
maybe a little bit.
We get presented with Strange as a surgeon, but he's dealing with disease and pathology that is just a mask for demonic attacks. It's like, Mr. Johnson, did you know that there was a balloon-sized demon, like, tethered to your brain tumor? It's like that kind of stuff. They're like little gremlins and protoplasmic lichen on people that nobody can see but Strange, and we just see the symptoms, and he can see the cause.
He needed his hands back? Couldn't he just magic them?
I know, right? Well, he does the surgery. I'm the only one who can do the surgery, and he's also fighting the, you know, the little Tasmanian devil. That's what they're kind of designed like. But while working, like, on call at the ER, a whole bunch of victims are brought in. It's like a MASH unit helicopter landed. There are buildings that are collapsing on the waterfront. And instead of treating the wounded, he heroes up and goes after the cause. I mean, that's a pretty weird catalyst to, like, get your missions. Like, if you're supposed to be treating the wounded at the hospital and you're like, oh, where are these? Oh, there's a fire over at the old Johnson house. But he goes out there, and sure enough, this building's coming down. But unfortunately for Doc, the cause is the Wrecker, who totally mops the floor with Strange and throws him in the drink.
Whoa, that's not good.
It's like,
the Wrecker is who you invite when you want your hero to look good.
It's like, nurse, cancel my 2 o'clock. He's going to be a while. But here's one thing we know. How good is Kev Walker's Wrecker? Right? We know it's good, and it's really good here. It's like the best Wrecker I've ever seen, other than like some really ugly Kirby stuff, where they showed, like, you know, his crooked teeth. The Wrecker really looks cool, and that enchanted crowbar of his, when you start slamming Doc in the shoulder with it, you know, what's going to give?
Well, wouldn't it just kill him? I mean, the Wrecker has fought all kinds of does he now have super strength, Doctor Strange?
No, I think he,
I mean, is he just a dude in a cloak? So I would think if he gets hit with a regular crowbar, he's going down, much less a magic crowbar.
No, he goes down pretty good and gets thrown in the river. So, I mean, other than the great art, I'm not too happy with this take on Strange. It's too much to have his hands fixed. I guess going to be some stories that you can tell with him at the hospital being a surgeon again, right? Doctor Strange, let's have him be a doctor again. But I don't think it's worth it. It, like I said, I think it cheapens the core of the character too much. But the Kev Walker art is really nice, so I'll keep tuning in to see where it goes.
Well, maybe he can, like, superpower Wong up or something. Or give him a bunch of artifacts and send him out while he's taking house calls. Or take... Yeah. What? So is Ghost Dog still around?
Not in this issue, but he was still around in Wade's other series, so he should be.
Okay. I didn't know if they were going to keep the same kind of crew of... It's always fun. Doctor Strange always attracts funny little sidekicks and everything.
Yeah, who doesn't like Ghost Dog? Ghost Dog showed up in Black Cat as well. That was good.
I mean, maybe. Do you think it's time to get the Defenders together?
I think it's time to get the New Warriors back together.
Because then, now with the Hulk taking the horror turn, Doctor Strange works great with horror. You know, like Mephisto and Nightmare and all that stuff. They can make a real kind of horror-based. I mean, I guess you'd have to have Jane Foster would be Valkyrie.
That'd be fun.
Get the Silver Surfer back.
Yep, Namor needs to sit for a little bit, but...
Yeah, maybe, you know, but you don't need... I mean, it was ridiculously overpowered, but that was before they made every superhero, like, super strong, so you'd get away with it, but now you could do it, and it would just be all kind of Al Ewing-style horror stories.
I miss Nighthawk.
Really?
The real Nighthawk.
Oh, not the one showing up in Avengers.
No, not that one.
I don't know. The Thunderbolts really abused Nighthawk.
They really did. Hey, speaking of those types of issues, we should maybe next episode we could get back to doing some New Warriors. It would be fun to revisit some more 90s comics. And we're almost to the good stuff.
What? For Steve, the good stuff is issue 75, so hold on. We're going to be speeding up our pace a little bit.
Oh... You know we have an annual crossover before we can get to the good stuff, right?
Oh, no.
Four issue, four annuals.
Just annual blocked me. All right, any closing shots, or should we wrap this episode?
I should go through all my issues, like do a one-minute wrap-up.
Whatever you want to do. Take more minutes if you want.
Should I just do shout-outs to Immortal Hulk, Unstoppable Wasp, Thor, King, Silver Surfer, Black, Hawksbox, Runaways, Black Cat, Meet the Skrulls, Avengers, Amazing Spider-Man, Venom, Absolute Carnage, Guardians of the Galaxy, Jane Foster, Fantastic Four Grand Design, DD, Future Foundation, Ghost Spider, Jessica Jones, Purple Daughter, West Coast Avengers, Marvel Spider-Man, City at War, Mr. and Mrs. X, and Future Fights.
Wait,
maybe 2099 and Annihilation Scourge.
You're digging the new Ghost Spider. I bailed on the print. What am I having?
No, I'm actually behind.
Oh,
I haven't gotten this series yet.
I've got the first couple issues, and then I was like, you know, I'm not feeling it. But I do have. I'm still on Future Foundation. I'm still getting those issues.
I just feel like haven't
got up.
The biggest, most popular thing we haven't covered in the last year is Spider-Man Life Story. I feel like that's a giant albatross.
We covered the first issue, right?
Oh, yeah, you did cover an issue.
We were left scratching our heads.
That's right.
That'll be up to you. I think Kevin just produced another segment, Andrew.
Oh.
All right.
Yeah, it's weird that Ghost Spider sort of has a Spider-Man 2099 problem. Maybe. Like, the thing you like... And then they take the character out of the thing you like, and then you see if the character can exist, if it feels right, that whole thing. And you sort of have to work it around weirdly to get it to work properly.
Hmm. Sounds like they got work to do.
I mean, I know there's Gwen Stacy clones running around, so you could just, you know, say she's another clone or something.
Is there?
But you know, if they're
going to Gwen Stacy clone,
you have to do that whole thing. Well, I'm like, I guess clones have rights.
How many times have I seen a storyline end where she walks off to live her life, but I don't know if someone's ever wrecked that.
It's what kind of a weird title Spider-Gwen was, that she goes back in time, talks to Gwen Stacy from the 60s, and it's totally awesome. Comics are weird.
It's a ghost spider now, Kevin.
Yeah, it is.
All right, with that, that's another episode of Marvel Noise. Thanks for catching up with us as we caught up with each other. Tune in again next time for some more madness in the mighty Marvel matter.
Indeed. And that dupe solo issue from Wolverine X-Men, one of the best issues of the last decade. Ooh. The previous decade.
That would be worth a reread. All right, until science reliably quantifies magic, make mine Marvel. Later.
See you.